Good day, nerds, and welcome to episode 28 of the Nerd Cantina Show. Today, Steve and I are going to have quite a bit of discussion around. At first, we've got some movie news with Venom 2 getting a new director. Then we're going to talk DC and TV news as there's some new details coming out on some of the TV shows they have in the works. We're going to discuss the somber topic of the mass shootings and some of the nerd talk around that in the video game industry and one of our beloved nerd figures.
The nerd godfather.
Yes. And then we're going to have a spoiler-full discussion, our thoughts on the Boys series now that we've both wrapped up watching that. But we'll give you a chance before we get started on the Boys for you to opt out if you haven't seen it yet. So stick around.
Calling back all nerds. Nerds!
All right, welcome back, nerds, and thanks for joining us. And Steve, before we get started on the news, I want to just make sure that everybody knows to go to our YouTube channel to check out your latest review. As again, we've taken the reviews out of the shows if you're used to hearing that, but Steve gives a pretty scathing review of Hobbs and Shaw, which I think some people on Twitter were already disagreeing with.
Yeah, a lot of people enjoyed the movie. I don't know what the hell they were watching. But there, I want to say Rotten Tomatoes, 72% of people's opinions are totally shit. So I don't know what to say, man. It was not enjoyable. But I guess that's where the bar set for some people.
I think for that Fast franchise. But again, if you want to hear the Steve's opinion from that 28% that thought the movie was trash. Go ahead and stop over at the Nerd Cantina's YouTube channel, and Steve's got a quick review regarding what his thoughts were on how bad that movie was. All right, now to the current news. First topic that we'll discuss is Venom 2, and there's some new information coming out with the director and the direction that maybe Venom 2 is going to go.
Yeah, they hired Andy Serkis as the director for this. I was a little shocked. You know, you don't really think of Andy Serkis when you think of big-time directors, even though he has directed some, you know, pretty big movies in his past. This dude's career is one of massive amounts of luck, I presume. But we'll see how he goes. He's really big into motion capture. He knows all about that technology and stuff. So if he takes his knowledge of the workings of the film into a good script and storyline, it might be all right.
Because you've already enlightened me, but maybe you can enlighten the audience. When you talk about his luck, where's his luck come from? For those who don't actually know who Andy Serkis is.
Andy Serkis is the man who played Gollum in the Lord of the Rings movies and the Hobbit movies. And originally, he was just the random dude they selected to wear the dot suit. And then it turned out that he could do the voice, so he pitched Peter Jackson the voice of Gollum when he was doing the scenes. So like he was doing the scenes with the lines for the actors, and they plan on overdubbing them. This is very like Star Wars esque, you know. The actor who played Darth Vader didn't know that James Earl Jones was going to overdub the shit out of his voice, and when he walked in the theater was very pissed off. So this was kind of the same thing. Andy Serkis just kind of pitched the voice. Peter Jackson loved it. He did three Gollums in the Lord of the Rings movies, and he's taken that now into directing one of the Hobbit movies. He's now going to direct the second Venom. Like he's pivoted a leotard audition into being a you know, A-list director, I guess. Good for him. You know, I don't know. It just shows right place, right time. Anything can fucking happen, man.
Yeah, it's an interesting start to his career. And, you know, he's acted in the Marvel universe as, what's his character's name? Claw in Black Panther.
He was a Claw in the Black Panther movie.
And
he was actually good in that. Like him in that movie. Like, he did a really good job.
Yeah, so I'm excited. Maybe they're bringing him on because of his experience with CGI through The Hobbit, through The Lord of the Rings, as well as like he directed the movie The Mowgli. Maybe he'll bring some actual like emotion and acting through the CGI of Venom, because it really kind of lacked in the first one. I don't remember what your thoughts were on the first Venom movie, but it was okay.
I gave it a decent review. It wasn't, you know, so my problem with the first Venom movie wasn't really storyline. I didn't think Tom Holland was that good in it.
Hardy.
Or Tom Hardy, my bad. I'm thinking Spider-Man. I didn't think he was that good in it. Some of the stunt scenes were really horrible. You know, it was just badly shot. You could just blatantly tell it wasn't Hardy, and I don't know. It was kind of like a C movie, I guess. You know, they succeeded in some areas, they failed in others.
Yeah, I thought it was an entertaining movie, but I thought the same thing about Tom Hardy. I didn't think that he was, you know, I don't know really what I was expecting of Eddie Brock, but it wasn't that, I guess. It was just a different take. I didn't care very much for his acting, but I thought the Venom movie was a decent introduction, new introduction to Venom. And then, you know, the end credit scene with Woody Harrelson. Hopefully he's still signed on for Venom 2, because I'd love to see a Woody Harrelson Carnage.
Oh, yeah. I think it's like done deal, to tell you the truth. Like, it would be really shitty of a person to film a 2-minute cameo at the end credits to
and then hold out the movie
and then just be like, you know, don't really think I want to do this. Yeah. it'd be kind of shitty.
But they're still looking at, I think they're hoping for a 2020 release. I think at this point in time, you're not getting a good Venom movie with all the time it takes for the CGI out in 2020, but we'll see. And then, you know, obviously it wasn't a part of the Phase 4 plans. So don't know how it ties into the MCU as a whole.
Yeah, I mean, they turn out some of these movies pretty fast.
Curious to see how they're going to tie in. I know it's been rumored
that's going to be the thing is do they waste an opportunity here?
Yeah, to kind of tie it into the MCU.
You know, it'd be kind of stupid to waste the opportunity to wrap everything in. Same thing with like the next Deadpool and everything. Like, you can take these properties and try to find a way to wrap it into the universe so that you can have cameos and things like that in intertwining movies. So if they waste that opportunity, I'll be a little disappointed, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, and I know the head of Sony had said that bringing in Tom Holland was a plan. So we'll see if it happens. Hopefully it does. Hopefully it does start to wrap in. Venom's a great character to bring into the MCU. But moving on from Marvel news to DC news, there's a lot of talk around the DC TV shows coming up. First one was the Crisis on Infinite Earths that they've been talking about for a while now. They're starting to get some details on casting, exactly how much crossover is going to take place in this one. So first one, we're looking at Michael Rosenbaum, rumored to be in it. This is the Lex Luthor from the Smallville days.
Yeah, I have to watch this now, just for the simple fact that he's going to reprise the Lex Luthor role. Like, to me, his portrayal of Lex Luthor in Smallville is one of the best television villains of all time. Like, to me, he will always be Lex Luthor. I don't think anybody is going to portray that character with such depth and range that he did over all those seasons. It was sad that towards the end of the Smallville series, they kind of wrote him off and he tried to pursue a film career and didn't really end the series on a really high note. But his work on that show and crafting a very complex type Lex Luthor character was great. That was my favorite part of the show by far.
Yeah, he was really good in it. It was definitely a sympathetic villain in the sense that, yeah, he played it well. We're also looking at it. There, I think, confirmed that, you know, you're going to get an Arrow crossover into there. You're going to get Black Lightning crossover into there. And this is kind of similar to what they did in comics, which is a huge crossover event on this Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Hey, we shit the bed on our movies. Let's see if we can't wrap all these TV shows together and put together a decent product.
Yeah, and this one is still on CW, and part of the I don't believe this is the one been brought into the DC Universe streaming service. So they've got,
because then nobody will watch.
As I say, so they've got their DC streaming service, and still their biggest show coming out is going to be on standard cable, not a part of their streaming service. But I know you were excited for the Kevin Conroy news.
Yeah, it's kind of cool that they're bringing him in as an actor rather than just doing the voiceovers and things like that. It'll be fun to see him take on the role as Bruce Wayne in actual, you know, life. He's been the voice for forever. Like, he is. When you hear Batman in your head, you sure as shit don't hear Christian Bale's Batman. You hear Kevin Conroy. He's got that distinctive depth to his voice that commands like that authority without coming off. I don't even know how to put the Bale voice into words. Like, I don't even know if you had to describe to a deaf person what that sound sounds like. I can't even, I'm drawing a blank. There's probably a good joke in here somewhere, and it's just so shitty, I can't even think of it.
I got nothing for you on that, but yeah, it'll be cool. I'm just curious on how they tie that in. Kevin Conroy's on the older side to play an actual live-action Batman, so we'll see.
Hey, we got multiverses now in all our comics, so we just fucking write it off to a multiverse.
Yeah.
Call us all stupid, just eat your fucking porridge, dummies, and accept that you have these goddamn characters in your life. So that's where we're at right now with comic book movies and TV shows. So just shut the fuck up and eat it.
Yeah, I think so. And then the DC Universe show, that a new Titans trailer came out. I've never seen the first season. I know we've got people in our Facebook community that say that it's great and it's worth at least getting a month worth of DC Universe so you can binge through that. I still have yet to do it. Have you?
I almost bought it. It was, the first season was on sale on for Blu-ray at Target for like $15. And I was like, ooh, $15? And I get to check out what they consider like their prize show. But I kept walking with the cart. I don't know if I ever expect that price to go lower than that, but yeah, it didn't get me to pull that trigger yet. If next time I see it, if it's still on sale, I'll probably grab it just because that's the only way I'm gonna get to watch it. I'm not subscribing, like, that's for sure.
You're not gonna to pad their numbers and give them a subscription.
I mean, they give away one free month with, you know, when you sign up. I might sign up for a month and try to pound out everything I possibly can for the sake of the cantina. But I'm not at that point yet.
Yeah, me neither. There's many shows out there I haven't seen yet that are already part of what I am paying for. I'm not willing to pay for another. But if you are a fan, Titans 2 trailer, go check it out. The show's coming. And then before we go into kind of our discussion around The Boys, we got a bit of, it's really sad news that it's something to talk about, and we don't want to get political on our stances on the mass shootings that have taken place. So you've got El Paso, Texas, and Dayton, Ohio, in grief right now, as they had two significantly violent acts taking place in their communities. Reason why we bring it up in our cantina is just because there's been some now, you know, using this to attack in the nerd realm. First, you've got a little bit of a pretty tone deaf tweet from, you know, the godfather of nerds, Neil deGrasse Tyson. And he put out a tweet that simply just captured statistics, pointing out that while the mass shootings are going to get all of the publicity, all of the media attention, there's a lot of other deaths taking place when you talk about car accidents, accidental deaths, medical deaths.
Well, and that's, yeah, and the numbers he put up, the statistics he put up with these, you know, they were all based off that 48-hour window. So everyone's saying, you know, two mass shootings in 48 hours. We had over 30 people dead in 2 days in mass shootings. And, you know, I kind of side with Neil on this. If you really are upset because these are essentially preventable deaths, right? Like, that's why it's so tragic, is that we feel that this is just totally unnecessary and totally preventable. So why are we as a society letting this happen? He rambled off a nice list of majority preventable deaths that go totally unnoticed, that dwarf the 30 people that died in the mass shooting in 2 days. You know, I think it was 200 suicide deaths every 2 days. You know, 2,000 car accident deaths in every 2 days. You know, the amount of other preventable situations that cause death in our society that go just totally unnoticed.
Yeah.
You know, what's the military statistic? 21 people.
It's 22 a day commit suicide.
22. So that's 44 veterans that are killing themselves every 2 days.
Yeah. So I agree. Are there other causes to focus on that can gain attention? Yes. This tweet, the reason why I say it's tone deaf is just, he doesn't have to put these timing stats out in the 48 hours, right? He doesn't have
but,
to.
But don't you, though? But don't you? Like, if you really want people to take notice.
Idiots like us are talking
notice
about it now. Yeah, I guess. If idiots like us are talking about it, yes. But it detracts from the actual point he's trying to make, because most people then can't actually even see what you're trying to point out. And
But that's his point. That's his whole point, is that you are ignoring these things. Even when he puts out the tweet in a, like you said, tone deaf manner, and people are acknowledging the tweet, they are totally bypassing the point of it and going straight towards that emotion, when that was the reason why he put out the tweet, is we got to stop thinking with our emotions and start rationalizing, you know, what goes on in our society.
Yeah, the part of the issue that with when we talk about this as a specific topic, the mass shootings, we're talking about two individuals causing all of this. You know, when you compare that to the 500 medical errors, there's not one dude with a scalpel who just killed 21 people out of that 500, right? There isn't one person who's causing massive violent acts. It's a part of the medical industry, the accidental deaths due to medical errors. So it's harder to politicize that and talk about that when you can look at one individual who took an extremely violent act towards you know, completely innocent population. It's a different issue, and it's always going to gain much higher attention than, you know, the ones and twos in random communities that are dying due to medical errors. So yeah, I see what he's trying to highlight, because it is it's things that people don't generally know is happening in the background. But man, I just wish he let it breathe for a second before doing the tweet, because I think it takes away the vast majority of people aren't going to pay attention to that message.
I see your point, but at the same time, I admire his bravery to be able to accentuate those statistics and in a time where people would actually listen, because he could put out that same tweet in 2 weeks and it'll get five likes and three retweets. You know, no one will give a shit. The fact that he did use the timing to highlight the fact that, you know, because I think a lot of his point too is that people are going into Walmart now looking for the next active shooter, and statistically, you are more likely to die from a whole range of issues when you leave the house other than an active shooter. But because the media likes to portray these things as a giant plague in our country, we don't really have a rational look at our safety level.
Yeah, and fear is oftentimes rarely rational as far as where we place our opinions on fear. I agree. It's, like I said, I don't disagree with the sentiment of what he's trying to say. I just thought it was a bit tone deaf. I thought the time was bad. I still love me some NDT.
Well, and another point too is that, you know, I live in Chicago, man. there's 60 people shot, 20 people dead every Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Yeah.
Don't nobody give a shit. I don't see CNN on the streets of Chicago. I don't see, you know, anybody from Fox News posted up in Inglewood wondering why essentially there are mass shootings every weekend in Chicago. You know, yeah, they like to use our name anytime they want to pitch gun control or anything like that. But hasn't this kind of become normal place in our society? I mean, it's morbid and horrible to say, but like, are we really shocked when these things happen?
So it has kind of become commonplace in U.S. society, and that brings up kind of the next little topic I wanted to go on regarding this, and that's you've got the president and politicians talking about this being a part of our culture in our society, and part of it being, I'll just read the quote from President Trump where he says, "We must stop the glorification of violence in our society. This includes the gruesome and grisly video games that are now commonplace." So he believes it's commonplace because video games are commonplace and violent video games are commonplace. And kind of put that old kind of, you know, people want to call it, you know, the baby boomer explanation towards violence or whatever else, and just blame it all on video games. And that's just not rooted in any science. And that's it. That's attacking, you know, they're blaming the nerd community as a whole, geek community, video gamer community as a whole for the cause of these things. And there's just no science that supports that violent video games turn people violent.
I don't understand how you can say it's video games when just as easily you can buy a video game and shoot, you know, objects and stuff in video games. You could just as easily go buy a real gun and go to a gun range and shoot the shit out of stuff for real. You know, so maybe it's just our infatuation with weapons of death.
The argument would be, you know, that, well, it's because we see it, we're desensitized to it, and it's just so common that we see violence every single day that it's really no big deal to commit violent acts. But when you look at the video game industry as a whole, especially when you talk about per capita estimates, man, we don't consume video games at the highest level in the world. But we sure as hell have the most mass shootings in the world per capita. It's a pretty damning statistic.
When you look at video games on humans, you know what I mean. And without so you take countries aside, and you look at the amount of humans playing video games and how that would, you know, make them violent. The numbers aren't there. The United States is the outlier when it comes to the violence, you know.
The carrying out on the violence that we're exposed to, right? We're across the globe, we're all exposed to about the same violence. The video games that we consume are consumed at a higher level in South Korea and other Asian countries. But there's no significant mass shootings taking place there. So there's something else that is causing the United States to be the ones who are taking arms against civilian populations.
Well, and why is it automatically video games and not movies? Why is it automatically video games and not music that all glorify, you know, like, I don't think video games glorify violence. You can consume it and you can be a part of it. You shoot things, you beat people up in video games. Yeah. But I don't think at any point it glorifies, like, I think it tries to bask in reality, to whereas music and movies actually make it look cool. Like, I should be doing this. Like, how is it that a video game is to cause, but when I go to the theater and dudes are just shooting up, like, I mean, John fucking Wick, bro. Like, John Wick is the man right now. Everybody loves these movies, but nobody's blaming John Wick for dudes walking into a room with 30 people and capping them when that's all he does.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't have the statistics in front of me as far as how much, you know, what is the popularity of movies like John Wick in other countries. We know it's high here in this country, but I believe it's high in other countries too that, again, don't have this problem. We remain the in, the worldwide outlier.
Anime's huge in Japan. You don't see people Naruto running up and down the street, drop kicking people in the fucking head. You know, like they're like, I think this is just such an easy scapegoat, and we don't give humans the decent credit to be able to compartmentalize these things.
And that's the only reason why I wanted to bring it up here in the podcast, is just because it's a misdirected kind of attack at the video game industry to say that, hey, you guys who are playing video games, the guys who are creating video games, you are creating this problem. And it serves as such a distraction from actually trying to figure out what the hell the problem is and addressing it. There is a reason why we are an outlier. The science does not support that it's video games or movies or TV. So we got to figure out what it is outside of blaming that easy target of, oh, you see violence, you become violent.
And I think it's important that the nerd community kind of champions this. You know, if we don't at least stick up for ourselves, we're always going to be the scapegoat of this issue when we're not a part of this issue. You know, I'm like, I honestly want to take the tweet that we put up yesterday and put it on a t-shirt and on like the back of the t-shirt, just put, you know, stop blaming video games, just because, you know, for those that don't follow us on Twitter, which you should, I put up a tweet yesterday that just said, of course, video games warp our minds. That's why when I was a kid, I couldn't stop stomping on turtles and climbing down sewers. You know, it's almost laughable to think that these virtual simulations are causing, like literally causing us to say, you know, I play Tomb Raider all the time. I ain't climbing that fucking tree. Like, sorry about it. Like, I'm not out hunting for fucking buried treasure. Like, I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
You know, I love car games. I love racing games. I have convinced myself now that if I was in a real car that could do like 180 miles an hour, I'd be that good. That's how good I am at like car games. When I get in my car, I have no urge to go 180 miles an hour, even though I fully have the confidence that I could be dipping and weaving like I do on Forza. I'm not going to do it. I have no urge. Like, it doesn't transfer like that.
Yeah. But so there has been a fair amount of actual studies that have gone through it. We briefly discussed this in what was our first separate Cantina conversation, which was show 10. So if you go to thenerdcantina.com/show10, if you haven't listened to that episode with Dr. Rachel Cowart, she spoke about kind of the science and some of the negative stigmas around video games, violence being one of them. So if you haven't listened to that podcast episode, I suggest you do. It really was a great conversation. We're actually going to have Dr. Cowart on to discuss something else here in the near future, and maybe we'll get her and the other board members from her charitable organization, TakeThis.org, who are going to be on a call with us for another Cantina Conversation podcast coming up.
Yeah, so we've touched on this subject before. I definitely highly suggest you listen to that, especially if you're a parent, and have an opinion on this. When you see people kind of co-signing to what the president said, or if your representative is on this bandwagon, write an email, comment on their Twitter, or do something and let your voice be heard. And defend the gamers of our community, and let people know that these gamers aren't sociopaths living vicariously through Grand Theft Auto, doing things that they wish they could do in real life, and are just polishing their gun before they go to bed, waiting for the day they take, you know, arms in real life to do what they do in video games.
Yeah, and even if the sociopaths are playing video games, that's not science. They weren't created, they weren't turned into violent people because of the video games. And that's where the video games to blame problem is. Yes, violent people might play video games. That does not mean they became violent.
It'd be like saying if all the active shooters for some reason ate Lucky Charms in the morning before they went and shot this, we should blame all this shit on fluffy marshmallows, because every one of these shooters had marshmallows before they in a week before they did this. So it's got to be purple hearts, yellow or pink hearts, yellow moons, green clovers. Like it's so what would it be, pseudoscience or anecdotal? I don't know exactly the term for that, but it's just such a waste of time talking about a problem that doesn't really exist.
But either way, it's become again the highest elected official in our country has put out that same excuse, which is being used again as a distractor from figuring out real ways. But if you want to engage in some conversations, you want to see some other people talking about it, it is like trending on Twitter under the hashtag video games are not to blame. There's a lot of people posting scientific articles, posting a lot of what we're talking about here as far as, hey, there's proof that this is not a thing. It's never been replicated in any study, and it's never been in any way proven. So go ahead and look at the science if you wish. Take our word for it if you don't. And let's move away from this topic here, the sad news, and let's talk about something we thoroughly enjoyed. We're going to go ahead and give everybody your spoiler alert. Hey, go ahead and bail out on us now if you have not seen The Boys. Yeah. If you haven't seen The Boys.
Spoilers.
Yeah. If you haven't seen The Boys yet on Amazon Prime, you should go watch it. So you should just save the little time that you're podcasting right now and go ahead and stream that if you have the ability
and
to.
And if you can't tell, we're not really good at adding sound effects into our podcast either.
The audio engineer hasn't really created that sound effect yet. So just take it for what it is. And if you're leaving us now, hey, farewell. Thanks for joining us. Watch The Boys and come back and finish this if you care to hear our thoughts.
You can go to YouTube. I did put up a spoiler-free kind of recap of The Boys on YouTube last night. I kind of go more spoiler-ish than I do in my movies just to kind of give you what the show is based on. But I definitely don't go into details, talk too much about characters or anything like that. So if you're on the fence, you can go to the YouTube and check it out and start watching, then come re-listen to this when you're done.
Yeah. But at this point in time, I don't know how many people are on the fence. This show, again, I have a hard understanding.
I'm not sure if it's just our community.
That's what I was going to say. I have a hard understanding of what is actually popular in the world because the fucking algorithms have us so tight that we really just... You know, when I log into the internet, I just see shit I already am interested in because it just that's what pops. So I'm seeing article after article about The Boys and about its success and about, you know, what got cut out of it, what changed from it, and a bunch of things that I don't know if everybody else is seeing this.
I don't think it's like a slam dunk hit yet. I think, though, a lot of people are talking about it and more people are starting the show. So you had us like diehard fans start it the day it came out waiting for it. You know, the people who own the comic who have read the issues and knew what to expect from this comic. I think we all watched it right away, and the people that really didn't know much about it now are having people like us in their ear talking about like, oh man, you gotta watch this show. Like you gotta watch this show. So I think yeah. By the end of the month, I think the majority of pop culture will be all about it.
Yeah, and I do think this is a show that everybody should watch just because it's so different than what's out there. I mean, that's really what when it was first announced they were doing it, that's what we were hoping that it would be. That it would be different. It would be still true to the comics. Not necessarily true to the story of the comics because it's not. And I don't even really remember in great detail because I read the comic so long ago, but it's true to the tone of what they're trying to portray.
Yeah, and which is what needed to kind of be done. They go really off the rails with some of this stuff they do in that comic. You know, spoiler alert for the comic. There's some crazy shit that involves a gerbil that I did not need to see on television at all. But like you said, they keep the overall tone, they keep the overall plot of what's going on in the comic by presenting a realistic, you know, the superheroes in our Marvel comics, Marvel movies, DC, you know, all that, they're glorified versions of humans, you know what I mean? So even the anti-heroes And the heroes in a lot of these shows, they have flaws. They're not perfect. You know what I mean? They have their flaws, but none of them are...
None of them are like anti-society or... Yeah, they're all just interpersonal flaws that they have. But the ones here, yeah, the boys, it's,
you know what
it's
I mean?
Different.
I'm a little bit of a dick. You know, I'm you know, I obsess over this. It's like flaws that you're not ashamed of, you know what I mean? Like, they, none of the heroes really have flaws that they're too ashamed of. These, like, man, go real out there. The fact that we got, they touch on like the Me Too situations. They touch on, you know, being all powerful and having that kind of arrogance. You know, the corporate aspect of the show is what I really love, is because, you know damn well, if you had superheroes, if you had people that had this level of fame and power, there is no way that people that want to make money and exploit these things wouldn't be doing so.
Yeah, like Superman is not working at the Daily Planet to pay his rent. You know, yeah, like no. that's just not happening. No. And no. You know, this is, you know, sponsored superheroes, and it's, I think it is exactly what the world would look like. And you know, the twist in the end, as it hits, you know, the superpowers are all caused by corporate greed. Like, this was all along a long drawn out, long game plan.
This was the next, you know, a Lockheed Martin type corporation. They wanted to be the next defense contractors, and instead of spending billions of dollars on metal and crafting missiles and tanks, they did it scientifically.
Compound
and
V.
Crafted, yeah, metahumans, and went that route, and, you know, in order to show a need for metahumans, because, the you know, of course, the government and human arrogance says, well, we've been winning wars with tanks, why do we need metahumans that we can't really control? You know, it's all about control for the government. You know, they go and create their own villains. Like, they totally manipulate the world to fit the narrative that they're trying to pitch, which is, it was, to me, it was brilliant.
Yeah. Well, the only thing that was weird, you know, there's like hundreds of superheroes in this, and they somehow convinced everybody that it was like divine intervention, that you know, it was just random occurrence, but all the superheroes were in the United States. All of them, really? Yeah. Like, did we really play this out that like God only shines his light on the United States? I don't understand how they, man, it was bought off.
It's that Flint water. It was that Flint water, man. Like, yeah, they don't really touch on that much. You know what I mean? Like, they don't. No one acknowledges that, or, you know, talks about it, and they don't really give a time frame, right? Like, how long the Seven has been around. You know, so you have some people that seem to be in their mid-20s talking about them as they were watching them grow up as like kids. So you figure they've been around for at least a decade or so. But they don't really give you a major kind of time frame to put this in. So it feels like they, you know, it was like the dawn, you know, maybe right after the dawn. So it might not need it to be explained that much, I guess. I don't know.
I know, but
the show's so good you overlook it. Yeah, you know, it's like one of the things you don't think about while you're watching it.
No, it's just while you're talking about it on a podcast afterwards. There's just, the show is overall really good. It kind of ends the season in a weird note. One, it goes really weird with what they do with the Deep. I really have no idea what the hell is happening to this dude.
I do love it, though. Fuck that dude. Fuck that dude.
In his gills. Like, fuck him, yeah. In his gills.
Because they start the show off with his, you know, sexual harassment kind of story arc. So then for the rest of the show, you don't feel bad for this dude. at all, and they just drag him through the mud for the rest of the season, which I love it. You know, him trying to save the animals all the time and just epically fucking it up was great. Like, so great.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's the... I want to say it's like them manifesting how everybody really feels about Aquaman. You know, like, until Jason Momoa came around, Aquaman was the butt of everybody's joke. You know, so I think they're paying a little homage back to those days where you're like, fuck Aquaman. Who the fuck wants to talk to fish?
Yeah, no, that's definitely what it appears to be. And they also have the twists, which if you read the comics and you know, like, Billy Butcher is he's played really well in this series as far as what Billy Butcher is, but his wife and unborn child is dead in the comics. And at the end, we definitely get a big twist from that.
Yeah, they changed that. And I was a little disappointed because one of my favorite parts of the comic is where they reveal that his wife was raped by Homelander. And then when the baby claws out, he has the baby. And the baby's laser vision burns the two dots on his arm with the laser vision. And that's like the constant reminder to him as to why he hates all these assholes. Cause on his arm, he's just got these two eye width dots burned onto him at all times. Like I loved that concept in the comics when I read it, like that to me was just like straight savage. And you just totally buy into that Billy Butcher character. Like, yeah, man, fuck that. Kill all these motherfuckers. Like, they are dangerous.
Yeah. So, and then this one is, you know, it's kind of a weaker start to Billy Butcher because his wife, he doesn't even know if his wife is dead, or maybe she killed herself. And he still has this significant hatred for the supers. But at the end, you know, she's alive. It also, at the end, Homelander, it doesn't appear rapes her. It appears consensual. And
yeah, you don't know where this is going. Like, he could have still raped her, but she was ashamed, or she wanted, you know, because the day after she was raped, she was already, you know, huge pregnant. So maybe she wanted to keep the kid and she was ashamed to tell Billy. There's a few ways they can spin this, but it was definitely a lot different than the comic.
Yeah.
And back to the endings, not just that, but like, I don't think they wrapped up one story arc.
No, I said, like, the same thing.
Every character, every story arc is just hanging on a thread right now.
Yeah.
You don't know what's going, like, nobody had any closure whatsoever.
I thought it was actually really awkward way to end a season. You know, I don't know when the second season is going to come out, but it's like there's going to be a big gap. And exactly, there's almost nothing finished. Yes, we got some big new information in the finale, but
no, characters for sure developed throughout the story and you know, grew throughout the story. But when the season ended, everybody's in the middle of doing some shit.
Yeah.
You know, nobody had their story arc like kind of wrapped up with a bow. And then maybe had like the start of a new story arc that you leave it off on. Like, it ended and I literally had to go to like the Amazon Prime menu and be like, that's fucking it. like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, there's not a 9 and 10. Like, we just go let this ride right here. I'm going to have to wait fucking 13, 14 months. Like, they better be filming season 2 already right now.
Yeah.
Like they're really gonna, I mean, it could be a great marketing ploy. I'm just not used to, you know, you're used to some big finales, right? You know, we've had some epic finales on TV before, but this is some other shit. You know, the Homelander shit would have been enough to carry everybody on through, but A-Train's sitting there, the Deep is all depressive, you know, what is Kimiko, like, all these characters are just still up in the air with what's happening to them and where they're headed.
I hope, like you said, they're already, we know they're getting a season two, so hopefully they just don't make us wait too long for it, because I do really want to see where it plays out. And maybe this, I don't know if the 8th episode season is going to be what they're going to do next time. Maybe we'll get a little more to make up for the fact that the season was only 8. I feel like Amazon might have just been testing this out.
Yeah, as much as I like binge watching, I think that as humans, we need to have kind of what that Handmaid's model is. So for those that don't watch Handmaid's, they usually release like the first 3 episodes on one day. So you could binge 3 episodes if you want. Then they don't release episode 4 until the next Wednesday, episode 5, a Wednesday after that. And like having to take 2 months to watch the series kind of like spaces it out to where you're not waiting so long for the next season. When they dump all these and you watch them all in 1 day, 2 days, and then you got to wait an entire year, you know, it's like that movie wait. Like, we're not used to waiting like this for our television. We're used to, yeah, you go see the new Star Wars movie, it ends, you know, on a cliffhanger, and you know there's not another one coming out for 1.5 years, and you kind of write that off in your head. But TV, I think, I don't know, our brains are programmed differently for it, to where you get done with the season, you're like, you're used to only having to wait a summer, you know, until the next season starts, 3 months. And then you get the next storyline. But I'm not used to having to wait a year for my conclusions on my television shows. It's kind of fucked up.
Yeah, well, it's definitely where they left us in this one. And I don't know if you, again, let us know in the Facebook what you think of the show. But for the most part, it's gotten, I haven't seen anybody really with bad things to say about the show. You've got some great acting from people that you've really never seen before, other than the actor who plays Billy Butcher. You've got like what's been described as the poor man's Bradley Cooper playing Homelander. And if you don't see Bradley Cooper in that dude's face when he's talking, I don't know what's wrong with you, but it's definitely a strong resemblance.
For me, it was just really weird seeing Elizabeth Shue all over the television again. I haven't seen that woman in a long time. You know, I have a deep love for Adventures in Babysitting and Cocktail. I'm an 80s baby. You know, so I said it even on the YouTube review, every time she was on screen, I just wanted to yell at my TV, "Nobody leaves here without singing the blues." Like every time I seen her, I just, you know, Babysitting Blues popped in my head. And I just couldn't help it. But that's my old ass. But I think that wraps up pretty much our thoughts on The Boys. We definitely gave a lot of shit away. So if you haven't watched it and you kept listening to this, I hope we convinced you to even though we gave it away, to go watch it. It's a great show. Like I said in the YouTube review, in a time where we're really saturated with superheroes, it was really refreshing to get an original take on these things. You know, we've been beaten the head with the Marvels and the DCs, you know, Golden Boy kind of stories, even the, you know, the Dark Knights and these characters, they try to make them complex, but you always know where the story's going to go. You know, it's always going to end with a happy-ish ending, and things get wrapped up with a nice little bow at the end of them. It was really refreshing to watch, like, a, you know, imagine Marvel meets Game of Thrones, you know, like type show. It was really good.
Yeah, I'm excited for the next season, and let us know what you think out in the community. So I guess at this point, we'll thank you for listening to episode 28 of the Nerd Cantina Show. You could find some of the links for the things that we talked about today if you want to go and explore more on what we've discussed at thenerdcantina.com/show28. And that'll take you to the show page on our website. Also, visit us at thenerdcantina.com/community. And that'll take you to our Facebook group where we're pulling a lot of these topics from, and we're having these discussions all week long.
We talk about these algorithms all the time on our show. So if you can like, subscribe, comment on, you know, on iTunes for the podcast, on YouTube for the reviews and things like that. It really helps get our show circulated. So if you're a supporter of what we're doing here at the Nerd Cantina, if you just take the time to hit that like button, hit the subscribe button, leave a comment, leave a review, just take a few minutes of your day to give us a hand and help let us circulate in those algorithms a little better so people find us.
All right, well, thanks again, and hopefully you enjoyed it. Farewell, nerds.
See ya.
Real quick, we just wanted to mention one of our favorite new apps, which is PodCoin. So assuming that because you're listening to our podcast today that you happen to be a podcasting nerd, and if you are, I can't see any reason why you wouldn't want to get paid for your time.
I'm a big fan of getting paid to do stuff that I do in my daily routine anyways. I sign up for all the rewards programs possible. And with PodCoin, you actually get paid to listen to podcasts. So every minute that goes by that you're listening to your podcast, you are throwing away potential money.
So go ahead, download PodCoin app on either through iTunes or through the Google Play Store. And when you sign up with the promo code Nerd Cantina.
One word. That'll get you 300 free coins towards your account and get you on your way to earning that first reward from either Amazon gift card, Target gift cards, all kinds of things. You could also donate your coins to your favorite charity that they offer. You're going to be listening to podcasts anyways. You might as well get some free stuff for doing it. So download the PodCoin app, put in the code Nerd Cantina, get your free coins, and start earning money while you listen to our show.